Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to tonight's National MS Society Accessible Travel, Vacation and Travel Planning teleconference. At this time, all parties are in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, a question-and-answer session will be conducted at the moderator's discretion. At that time, if you would like to ask a question or make a comment, please press 7 on your telephone keypad. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ms. Meredith Perdue.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Meredith Perdue. I am the Manager of Client Programs and Services for Middle Tennessee. That's the Mid-South Chapter. And am here tonight with Howard McCoy. Howard is the President and CEO of Accessible Journeys. Little bit about Howard. Howard has devoted 22 years to making the world more accessible with Accessible Journeys. He was raised with a family member who had a disability, and I love this quote on his website. It says, "I grew up knowing nothing about disability issues. I only know solutions." And that's sort of what convinced me that Howard needed to be our speaker for this evening. So want to welcome Howard McCoy.
Hi, Meredith. How are you?
Doing great.
And hello, listeners there. Well, I guess we're here about accessible travel, and true, I'm the CEO and founder, but I'm not the only part of Accessible Journeys. We're vacation travelers up here in Pennsylvania. We plan vacations for folks with disabilities, primarily people who travel with wheels or family members who have wheels. Boy, that means walkers, scooters, wheelchairs, whatever would be thought to be wheels and in some way special appliances. What we do is create vacations. For MS, we just have a whole lot of stuff that's available. I was so glad that Meredith offered us to speak here tonight. First, because I want to commend you, Meredith. I think this is spectacular. I think this is just great, cutting-edge technology and the use of aids for everybody to have access to this and to call in and really listening to what your callers are going to have to say tonight, because it's not often, you know, in this world we get a lot of emails, but you don't hear people.
Right.
And a lot of the things that's great is when folks call up with their travel ideas, part of what makes this happen is thinking through problems that people have that they don't yet have solutions to. And some of our problems, we've had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people with the same problem, and we have really good solutions for. But other problems, you know, I'd like to hear how you did that so I can tell other people. So for our folks with MS, I don't have MS personally. I've had a dear friend for 30 years who had it and just thousands of clients. And I've traveled a lot with folks in our group that have MS, so I think I have a good understanding of what folks are coming to, but it's also listening to what each person has to say when they want to go away on a vacation. You know, they're all different things to all different people. And, you know, just because somebody has MS doesn't mean they have the same as everybody else does, because we all know that.
Right.
So the hardest things that we've done over the years has been trying to keep up with people's expectations. You know, because folks, when they're traveling, I think they have the idea of, I want to go to Rome, and that is in that idea all-encompassing of what that person has in Rome, but I'm sure it has something to do with, you know, Catholicism, the Catholic Church, maybe the Pope, maybe a visit to the Vatican, maybe the Colosseum, the Spanish Steps, a gelati. It has about 15 or 20 things to that element. If the person's going there and all those elements aren't fulfilled, well, then is the trip worthy of going? Was it great? Was it a good trip? Did you have a good time? Did you do everything you wanted to? I think the hardest thing we've had to do is to have people understand what they're going to accomplish while they're there, to really look at that, you know, as to 7 days in three countries is really pretty quick. You know, in my business, at Accessible Journeys, in addition to being the administrator, I'm also the land strategist. And when we're looking at a vacation, we really like people to be in any given city for 3 days. So if somebody wants to go away and they say, well, I would love to see these three cities, well, you always start at 9 days,
mm-hmm.
3 days a city. If you say, I am tired always, well, boy, that's just a start. 4 days a city, that's 12 days already. Maybe a day to get there, that's 13 days. That's where those vacations for three cities start that we like to work with people who have MS.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just a comfortable schedule, and when you deal with thousands of people that, you know, tried to do a three-country, six-day vacation, and then they came to us and did it a different way, looking at that three-, four-city solution, they found that they had really good vacations, and what we found, they came back to us, and we're in 25 years of business this year, so something's
wow.
right about that solution. Yeah.
So, in your opinion, what makes people with MS different from other populations who travel? You mentioned fatigue.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well,
mm-hmm.
they definitely are in a different population. And if I would want to say within that whole population, everybody in the whole population has got some things in common, and everybody is different.
Exactly.
You know, they got a whole lot of diagnosis, like when were you diagnosed versus how long have you had it, and second, like what do you have? Those things all relate to some things in the travel industry. And for me, they relate to, you know, energy,
mm-hmm.
Heat,
mm-hmm.
and incontinence. So those things, if you're going to take a long flight, well, you don't have to necessarily worry about the heat. But, boy, you know, the bathrooms on some of those planes are like cabinets. Second, if you're going to go on any of our Egypt or our African safaris or our South African programs or down into South America, heat's an issue. It really is. Not in our Alaskan cruise, but heat really is an issue. But then energy is a problem. I just mentioned Alaska. For us here on the East Coast, well, it's a whole 9 hours for us to fly up to Anchorage. And then we have to get to the ship, so that day becomes about a 14-hour day to start a cruise. For our MSers, we like everybody to come up the day before. It's still a 9-hour flight, but you're not in that rush of then getting down to the cruise ship, and then the cruise ship takes off at 10 o'clock at night on an Alaskan schedule, which is 4 hours, literally 2 o'clock in the morning for us folks here on the East Coast. We're just pushing off.
Ooh.
Yeah, and if you pay for a cruise, you got to be up when you're pushing off from Alaska. So, you know, that first night is just compounded by the second morning in College Fjord at 6:30 in the morning.
Hmm.
6:30 in the morning, Alaskan time, so pushing off at 10 o'clock, you would think you'd go to bed and you'd get up at 6 and walk out your balcony, and there's the sunrise, and there's the fjord, and that is what it is. Walk out, and there's the sunrise, there's the fjord. But it's 6 o'clock in the morning. For somebody with MS, that's a lot. Man, that's a lot for me. You know, I'm 57 and it's a lot. You know, it was a lot when I was 40. So that schedule, you know, if folks are going to be aware of that, that might not be for them, or they may need to take different precautions. And we like to always work on that because some folks, you know, they can hit the ground running and they're good for a whole week before they fizzle. Other folks with MS fizzle right from the start, and they regain their energy, but so slow that if it isn't built into the vacation, they just never catch it up by the time they have to come home.
Right.
You know, if the first candle goes out and forevermore, it won't be relit. So those things, we've had a lot of folks that they know that, and they could say, well, I can do one day here, and this will be the day that I'll go out with my family and kids, and we want to really plan to do this. But this is the day that my other family member and the kids want to do all these other things, you know. So we set, like, you know, doing the canals in either Venice or Amsterdam, or definitely seeing the Louvre, and that's air-conditioned. You know, those things were big on these people's list that they did as a group, and then when everybody couldn't do it, the family did something else, and this person was content to have their air conditioning and their whole family with them. So we do a lot of different planning for people with MS.
Sounds like it's all about planning. Well, what would you say would be the hardest things that you've found for people with MS to do on vacation?
Wow. That one would probably have to be to, like, figure out that, you know, you're not going to eat the whole elephant, just, like, take it down one bite at a time. And in today's economy, people are driven to get bargains,
mm-hmm.
and they're driven, it's almost like going to a smorgasbord, you know, will you eat a lot? Well, you know it, you know, it's a smorgasbord. Mm-hmm. So if you're traveling, you're supposed to have a vacation experience, a wonderful experience, and that means so many things. But for folks with limited energy or limited capacity and ability to get someplace and do it, you know, it could just be just not possible to set that bar that high. So part of what we want to do is really find out, like, what are those expectations? If there are 15 expectations of somebody going to Paris and you have a vacation plan that doesn't include all 15 of those, the client will not be back.
Right.
So what we have to decide is, you know, with this person, you know, please understand that, you know, visiting all these museums and doing all these things and all of this takes a lot of time. And this is what we would see as a schedule. And if you believe in your home, you could keep up and compete with this same schedule. Now let's lay on that you're going to be tired for the first couple days. And if this person still agrees with this, then you have to go along with them. But what we want to see is that, you know, part of this is if you have to chill out for a day or two while you're there, well, you could do these two or three things if you feel good. If not, you're just in the chill-out mode.
Right.
You know, you're in Paris, you're in the cafe, you've got the sunlight on you. Wow, boy, isn't this just great. This is what it's all about. You're not in Cleveland. And that idea of, well, I am in Paris. I'm on the sunny side of the street. I never believed it. And you're not running out to 18 different museums because it's your only time in Paris. Is what it's really hard for people with MS, I think, to have as a real understanding of what a visit to Paris would be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if they're feeling great, there's all those 18 museums that they'll catch up with. But when they call us because they want to see 18 museums in Paris. You know? So those clients who say, you know, I went over there and I saw a couple, and I didn't do much, and I felt really great, and we had a good time, and I met some nice people, and I'd like to go back. Well, it because they weren't exhausted. You know, they weren't fatigued. They weren't just burned and snuffed out so they couldn't remember it. And I know I have a client and friend did that, had to do one of those trips and just forgot it, you know. And the pictures were something that she remembered. Like, I remember that. I remember how bad it was, you know. So those vacations are self-imposed, and I would want to say my personal experience, I've been with my friend with MS, with a few clients with them, and a few clients telling me about their experiences that they would like to avoid. And that, I think, is what, you know, to really come up with a good understanding. I was just talking with my colleague here about going away for the weekend. And she says, what do you want to do? I says, just get away. She said, that for you never has to do with the sunlight. I'm a gardener. I like rain and, you know, weather, and she likes the seashore and likes the sunshine and all that sun stuff, which just makes me sick, you know. I don't particularly like the sun. You know, I'm a hat guy with long sleeve shirts. We've never had skin cancer, but, you know, I can't see baking myself. So that my idea of going away this weekend is going to be someplace cloudy and wet. And, you know, that for me, I have a lot of expectations of that. It's been a really wet fall here, so I'm not miffed about it at all. She's not going to go away until this winter because she wants to make sure, my colleague, that she's going to go to the Caribbean where it will be always sunny. Sun's not my cup of tea, you know, but if I go away, I would not expect to have a sunny vacation every day. So that's what we try to help our people here who travel with us, what their expectations would be, what their understanding is. That's hard. That's the hardest part.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then trying to put that into play, into a vacation, and understanding that I'm going away spending all this money and I'm just going to lay there for 2 days. That's the plan. Believe it or not, Meredith, it is what's brought us a lot of business year after year after year, because people, when they don't feel good, do that. And then people, when they feel like, wow, I got a whole list of places of things I can do, and I did some of them. It makes them more adventurous, and it makes their vacation better, but it also gives them some control over, you know, sometimes your disease doesn't bite you, and you just got to go with it. And, you know, if they have a full list of places to go and it's a good time, then, you know, we've done our job.
So you're saying it's just best to be flexible.
Oh, my gosh, flexible. You know, that's the whole problem, is trying to match people's expectations with the flexibility in a travel plan. You know, just immediately Rome, Paris, London, that cascade. You're only going to be in London in so many days. You know, like Bing Ben will be there always, but you won't. And if you're not doing well by the time you get to Paris, the Champs-Élysées will always be there, and you won't. And by Rome, the Vatican won't move, but you may not have made it to Rome, you know? So those sort of things, I think planning and that flexibility is really paramount. And making, for some of our clients, not all of them, you know, everybody's got a different degree of illness and ability, but for some of our clients, I had a couple last year, it was to make each stop a pinnacle. Like, what is the whole purpose of this trip? And the daughter was like, my dad has always wanted to see the Eiffel Tower and Big Ben and the Vatican. Nothing more. Oh, the Leaning Tower. Those three towers. Those big towers, but it was like the Vatican, his wife. He gave in to her on that. And we did that vacation, and those folks were very pressed for energy. You know, they didn't have MS. One was 101, and the other one was 94. So their ability to move was limited by their ability to expend energy to move. So they came to us as people using scooters and wheelchairs. And definitely with it enough to travel, but definitely, you know, they needed a lot of rest. So it was a real challenge, and that's what we like to work with, you know, the flexibility and the challenge of getting people that want to see these great monuments.
Well, I was going to ask you what would you consider the perfect vacation for someone with MS, but it sounds like what you're saying is there is no one perfect vacation for everybody.
Well, there can't be. And I would want to say, you know, just like in the AB, we have two things. We have the AB and the DB, the able-bodied and the disabled body. So in the AB market, there's vacations that people don't want to participate in. And there's other types of vacations that people like. And in the DB market, well, boy, not only is that true, but there's a lot of vacations that my clients can't participate in at all. And I wouldn't know why if they did. They, you know, like, we don't do any mountain exploring. You know, we don't do any desert trekking. We do have day trips into the desert. But for certain folks, that's just prohibitive. You know, when we're in Egypt and our clients with MS go there, it's really dry heat, but it's like a glimpse into the furnace almost to get back into air conditioning. So the air conditioning is available in the cars and the hotels. We can't control the outside, and we can't control the monuments. If you want to go through a monument, we can take umbrellas. Do you know what I mean? Like, we can't control that weather. We can control that. And I've had lots of clients with MS go there, and they say, you know, it didn't bother them. You know, I was skeptical, and, you know, they came back. They had a great time. I've had other clients that, you know, they're very sensitive to the heat. They're very sensitive to time delay in their body or their sleep habits. So I would be far to say the one to tell them, wow, it's really cheap to go to Thailand, you know, when it's, you know, and we go to Australia and New Zealand. And I've had a lot of clients with MS go there. And it depends on their ability to sleep on the plane on the way down and to recapture and to restart. For all those reasons, we always, on our long hauls, if you look at our website, in Chile and in New Zealand, we always put a three-day frontage on all of our trips, where we offer tours, day trips, the group gets in, everybody gets assembled, they get their feet underneath of them, you know, they get their brain together, they get their body together, and then we join a cruise. That we find is the only way that some of our travelers can participate, because it's just too much to fly to New Zealand and say, here I am, I'm ready and accounted for. And it's just not possible to get down to Rio or to hop on a jet in Santiago. For a lot of people it is, but for a lot of our clients it isn't. So to say there's one vacation, perhaps that cruise might be, but we'd have a bunch of people that would approach it differently.
Right. You started speaking about different people and different abilities. Looking at accessible vacations, what about the family members of the people with MS or the able-bodied travelers that
right.
would be going with MS clients? How do you approach them and their needs?
Well, they're second.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I just got to say, I mean, our purpose of our trip first is for the DB traveler.
Right.
And any AB can come with them no matter where they go. You know, the path is clear, you know, and our job then is to, you know, if I would want to say who our client is and who our client isn't, our client always is the person and their family.
Right.
And how they want to relate to their family is really their business, and we're just helping with their vacation. So if they want to be involved with their family at every stage, you know, and I mean, I got some folks taking 25 and 26 family members away.
Wow.
And they're the only person in the chair.
Wow.
So, yeah, so, you know, whether it's like, you know, one person taking their husband or their wife, or they taking more of their extended family, we're usually working with the person in the chair, or we're working for their ombudsman, you know, the person who's got their best interest at heart and they're the connection between us. So we plan for them, and everybody else can go along. But that's not to forget that everybody else considers this a, quote, vacation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for somebody who's a care provider to go and to work and sweat like they do every day, well, there's some families that operate that way economically. There's some people that operate that way spiritually. But there's some people that, like, don't carry their own luggage in their life because they don't have to carry luggage. So we try to offer those folks that way of saying, we got you covered. You know, like, you guys can go on vacation, and yes, you can take care of each other, but you never had to carry luggage for two people before, pal. You know, I don't care how tough you think you are. You know, like, you know, go through an airport without a porter, and you're carrying your wife's luggage, and she's in the chair, or vice versa.
Hmm.
You know, hey, there's skills that, you know, we know about that you haven't had to meet in your daily life, because what care providers had to, like, pack up luggage and haul, you know, three suitcases and go to the other side of the world? Few. The ones that have realized that, like, wow, luggage is a real issue. So, you know, for vacationing families, we have to think about a couple things. First, it's always going to be accessible. That's what the vacation's for. Second, what that person really wants to do is going to be on them, but we're going to think of those things that, you know, make them look smart. You know, we're going to take care of all the luggage. We're going to take care of all the accommodation. We're going to take all the transportation. And then if they say, well, you know, my family, we want to do this together, and it's like, you know, mom, pop, and the two kids. Okay, well, then everybody goes away. But if it's like, you know, a lot of, like, you know, grandparents taking their couple kids and their grandkids, which we do a lot of, you have splinter groups. And those splinter groups, well, it's their vacation too, and how they'd like to interact with our client, you know, usually is that they're going to be out being crazy during the day, and they call it like seeing your face in the plate. You know, like, at night, you boys will be here. You know, I have a couple clients who have teenage kids that, you know, they went to Germany, and they had all this pipeline stuff going on, you know, the skateboarding thing.
Okay.
And they looked at it before vacation, and, you know, their parents were into it, so during the day the kids went, and it was a real hit. You know, for these kids to come back during the day and report that they had been in these, you know, suburbs skateboarding, and, you know, they showed pictures, and, you know, their grandma really thought we were pretty special doing that for these kids, because, you know, their parents were in the whole mess of the vacation saying that this could be a problem because these kids are into skateboarding, and how are we going to do this with, you know, this person on vacation? And it worked. It worked. So those things, I would have to say, everybody on vacation has needs. Our needs are fit first for the person, you know, for access. And then second, those people around them, what they would like to do on their vacation. Yeah. And some of it, as I said, might be just doing what they're doing at home. And then we try to pick up those things that, you know, the tips or the baggage or things that make them look smart, you know, because they don't normally have to handle that on vacation.
Right. Well, we've talked about ways that people with MS are different from able-bodied travelers. Mm-hmm. In what ways are people with MS or people with any sort of disabilities like the able-bodied travelers? How are they similar?
I have a disability, and I've realized that I had to give up on certain dreams, but, boy, I still dream a lot. And my clients dream, you know, and they have hopes and expectations. And my, if I would say my goal in life is to never let anybody down. You know, like if you're going to go and it's going to be tough and hot, well, then you need to know that. And then you can make your own decision. You know, I'm gone, and it's going to be tough and hot, and I'm going to make it. I'm going to come back, and that's what it's like for me to do this journey. You know, and that's sort of like what our name is about, because some people come, they want to do vacations. Other people, you know, they're a little bit more hardcore about this. You know, they're going away, they've never been away, or they're going to some place, and they've gone everywhere, but now they've got a disability. You know, and it's a challenge. It's like, you know, a height that they never imagined they'd be climbing. And for those folks, you know, their hopes and expectations and dreams, boy, that's like worth more than anybody could measure in what would be thought as riches. It's the stuff that powers people to do amazing things. And I think it changes people's lives to see those dreams, like, I'm going to stand on the Great Wall of China one day. Or this isn't going to hold me back. I know I'm going to somehow, you know, and wrestling with how it's being done. My personal one was that I was an adventure ice climber expeditioner guy, and having gone through degenerative joint disease and realizing that I could not walk ice climber, let alone climb glaciers, you know, I took that and started taking people with disabilities around, and then flew to Alaska and landed on Denali.
Wow.
Yeah, so for me, you know, I was there. I did it. I didn't, like, risk my life doing it. I risked a couple other friends who were with me. We didn't ice climb, but we were there. I accomplished my goals. I realized that, you know, I have other things to do, and since then I've sent hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people to Alaska in wheelchairs. And, so, like, my job is not to, like, be the ice climbing guy. My job is to send other people there to do it. And I don't know. It just is the way things have worked for me. So I think for other people, they have those same dreams, those same, I want it to work for them. And we're happy. I love listening to people's stories, their pipe dreams that, you know, literally come to fruition because they have that drive to put it together. You know, they always want to go someplace, they've always wanted to do something, and they're going to find out about it, and they're going to do it, and by gosh, that's included in their life, and that's one of the great things about, you know, I think people, you know, is our ability to do that.
Well, I was curious as to why you call your vacations accessible lifestyle vacations.
Wow. Well, because what we realized is that, you know, the guys and girls that, like, do our trips, the wheelies, as we call them, you know, the folks.
Wheelies.
Like, yeah. Like the real wheelies of, like, the life, you know. Like, that's, they're not walking any place. They're on wheels, you know, and they're wheelies. And, you know, like, the real wheelies, they have a lifestyle that doesn't involve the words accessible or barrier-free as much as, like, they're going to work every day and their lifestyle is, you know, unencumbered. They run into obstacles, and obstacles exist, but they're independent people. You know, they're in jobs, they're working, you know, they're married, they have children, families, you know, they're doing the whole nine yards, and now they want to go on vacation. But when they go on vacation, you know, they need these particular things. You know, they might, you know, need a slide board. I talked to a guy tonight. He wants to do his swimming 3 days a week, and he wants, like, a brute at the hotel to make sure that he gets into the swimming pool. And his physical conditioning is so important, he's willing to pay these people. And the hotel's willing to say, like, hey, we hear you. We're willing to charge you. So, you know, those things, having access for this fellow to the pool, was first one of his conditions in selecting that hotel. Second was, you know, can they get a Brutus to make sure that, you know, I get out of there because my wife can't. My kid can help, but he needs Brutus. The two of them and me, we can do it, but, like, he can't do it myself. My wife and him can't do it. Me and Brutus could. And the hotel is, you know, they don't have a lift. We would love if they had a lift. But, you know, he's gone all through second world countries accepting that it's fine for, you know, physical handling. Certain clients don't accept it. Other clients have not yet been dropped. And other clients, you know, that's the way things are done. And if it's the wheelchair and this fella in particular wants to be, you know, dunked in the pool and done his exercise, taken out.
So just to kind of sum up exactly what you do at Accessible Journeys, basically you are providing them safety and mobility aids, any kind of equipment that they need, any rentals that they might need. You help select the accommodations. You take care of transportation and sightseeing. Anything I'm leaving out?
Well, I guess I would say, well, who would call us? You know, like I think I'm planning to go away this weekend, and I wouldn't call me. You know, I'm going away a couple hundred miles. We're looking forward to having a great time. You know, I planned this. It's a vacation. If you're looking to go outside of the United States, then you would call us.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking to take a cruise, and you would say, my gosh, I'm going there. I'm using a wheelchair. How would I get off and see those ports? Or, you know, I have MS, and I've always wanted to go to London to see the Chelsea Flower Show. How would I, like, you know, those things. Yeah, you would call us. And then it would build from there. Like, you know, I'm on a ventilator. I need a hospital bed, and I need a lift, and I want to see the Chelsea Flower Show, and then I want to go to Paris, and then I want to have two people there to help me, you know, whatever. Those needs, well, they just go right to the fact that it's somebody who has expectations about what they want to do on vacation. And we would do those. What we can't do is to help people who say, I'm just going to London, and tell me what hotels you use. That's a disservice to them and the hotels, because, I don't know, if you were my client, Meredith, you know, and I knew all those little intimacies that we were talking about earlier, I would know whether I would really recommend that hotel for you, or, you know, you and your family like to go out at night, and you like to stroll. And you would like to have the theater district nearby. You know, when you start naming like 10 and 12 things, and I in particular, you know, if you're spending money with me, well, you want me to think about this. You know, if you're saying, what hotels would I recommend? And I said, you know, this resort, you would think that's pretty quick, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And I would never want to think that quick with somebody's money I was spending. If you ask me a question, I'll give you an answer. But if you're looking to plan a vacation, well, I have to think about that. You know, I can ask all the questions in return, like, what do you want to do and where do you want to go and what kind of vacation? And then we would build that vacation. And you'd say, well, I need a wheelchair when I'm there. Well, you're bringing one. No, but I need this one. Well, then we'll rent one. Well, I need a bed. Well, then we'll rent that one. You know, we can't do this, but we can do it that way. And what we would do is build upon a vacation that would one time look impossible. You know, I want to go to Israel. Like right now we're looking at doing a trip right now to see the pyramids and Jerusalem. So combining those two and ancient empires and Alexandria, there's a couple cruises, 13-day cruises that are doing that. And we have all the wheelchair support in line that could go visit the holy shrines as well as see the pyramids. It's possible to do that in a land vacation. But right now what we're tossing around is perhaps doing it in a cruise environment, and where that equipment comes from and where we would rent it and how those folks that say, well, I can only do that if I have this equipment with me. And that's where it comes into that accessible lifestyle vacation. you know, I'm on a cruise environment and I need this equipment with me, and we're getting off to see these sites and I need this equipment to see me, and I can't take all that stuff with me. So we're trying to work out that logistics of, you know, getting that equipment over there, because the folks in Cairo told us they no longer rent scooters. Batteries were a problem. So.
Wow.
Yeah, batteries.
Something that most of us wouldn't even think about. Well, how do people get in touch with you or get more information about Accessible Journeys?
Well, a couple things. One, I would say visit our website, and we're accessiblejourneys.com, like our name. We also have an identical website, which goes by disabilitytravel.com. During the week, we're here. We're located on the East Coast from you folks, and we're open from 10 a.m. till 6 p.m., and we're at 1-800-TINGLES. Like you get tingles in your fingers. Which, it's been there for so long that I still have clients that remember it that way, but for me, I don't remember it as much as it's 800-846-4537. So either way, through the web, calling us directly. I have found a lot of trips, like usually with our client trips, you know, folks that there's a couple trips to the well, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
you know, like laying out, like, here's what I thought I could do, here's what I think, here's what it might cost, here's some ideas. I'm great at talking around that stuff, you know, and then a return to more serious, like, yes, we're ready to go, and here's how much it's going to cost, and we know that, and we're ready to go. And then the third is people leaving. So I would say give us a call, write us an email, you know, give us the ideas that folks have. A lot of folks are looking to do cruising. I would say what would be best there really depends on, I would say, in the nature of what you're looking to do. You know, discounts are all over the place, and what most people are looking for is how they can spend their money, and what most of the cruise lines are looking is how they can shuffle that money away and, you know, spending less on the cruise, but then they charge you more for the drinks. Or the shore excursions are costing more money. So some of the idea of getting on a cruise ship isn't like it used to be. It's that, well, you know, when I'm looking at these vacations, cruises provide one source of seeing objects, and land vacations have another. So, you know, give us a call, and I don't know, maybe one of the cruise or the land vacations would be right for folks, because the old thing of, you know, something's right for another isn't right for you keeps popping up in our business. And so for some folks, a cruise is a good sampler. It's a good way to see a lot of cultures and still return to the same stateroom at night. For other folks, it's just too much. You know, you're just seeing that Italy, you're going to Florence and Livorno, well, it's an hour and a half from Livorno, the port, to Florence. Well, that's an hour and a half there and an hour and a half back, and that's 3 hours, and you're on an eight-hour tour, so you're hustled around Florence for about 5 hours, and that's your introduction to Florence. I can't say that that's the right introduction to Florence for everybody, particularly people with MS. A lot of our clients like to go there and want to spend some time at the museums, and that for them is to go there and to spend a couple days and to see the museums at leisure. But again, that's not right for everybody, because that's a little bit more costly than perhaps a cruise.
Well, are you ready to answer some questions from our audience?
I am. I'm thinking here, whatever they want to ask, I'm ready to go.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press 7 on your telephone keypad. Our first question is coming from Daisy. Daisy, please include the city and state from which you are calling before asking your question.
Altraville, North Carolina. My name is Daisy Jane Cash.
You may go ahead with your question. Thank you.
Yes, you were discussing about the travel that you are planning now. How would I access that and how much it would cost? To have MS and I'm pretty much in the bed.
Well, hey, Daisy Jane. I would first want to say that you could look at our website at accessiblejourneys.com. The second thing would be from North Carolina, there's a couple things that you would want to think about with cruising. First, that there are ports close to you where you don't have to fly. However, I'd want to caution you that usually those secondary ports are what is known as boutique ports, and they very often have some of the cruise line's older ships. Some of the older ships pose a little bit more unique architecture than some of the newer ships, and for our travelers with wheels, those older ships are a little bit more difficult. And so what you would want to do is really talk to one of our cruise specialists to see if there's a cruise going out that you can eliminate airfare. Your cruise costs are your cruise plus your insurance and your taxes and then your airfare. So if you have to get someplace, what's known as a cruise-only passenger, well, you're not flying there and you're not requiring transfers. If you're going out of a hub during the winter, that's always down in Florida, in Miami and Fort Lauderdale. Those particular hubs, you know, there's hundreds of staterooms there each week. There's hundreds of opportunities for Floridians and people in Florida just to pop on cruise ships. They're usually inside accommodations, but at the same time, there's always upgrades that happen to people.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Daisy Jane.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next person is coming from Amy. Amy, please state the city and state from which you're calling before asking your question. Thank you. Our next question is coming from Barbara. Barbara, you may go ahead.
My name is Barbara Collins. And I live in Memphis, Tennessee. My husband and I are planning a cruise to the Caribbean at the end of January, a 14-day cruise. And I am in a wheelchair. I can do some walking. My question is, the little trips that you take when you get off of the ship, last time I went on a cruise, I was walking. Will they have accessibility for me to get to the different places, the different islands we stop at?
Wow. Well, Barbara, if you're able to give me a shout, what cruise line are you on?
The Princess.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you the good, the bad, and the ugly of all this.
Okay.
First, Princess is our best supplier. We sell more Princess and Regent, actually, than any other cruise lines. And we put our groups on Princess because they just have a good understanding of what we require.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, going down into the Caribbean on an itinerary, I can tell you that there's a few places, and I mean just the fewest, that have wheelchair access, but primarily in the Caribbean, unless you're going to an American protectorate, they just don't have it. You know, I would be remiss to sit here and say, let's, you know, go through your itinerary and I'll yay, nay them, because I don't know that, you know, that would be fair to everyone or to you, because, you know, you've obviously got some time into this and, you know, you'd want somebody to think about it more than that. So what I'd offer is to get in touch with my colleague here,
mm-hmm.
Who's the cruise specialist, you know, during the day, and give a chat, and she'll be able to give you more information. But, you know, as far as us helping you, what happens is when were not an agency on your cruise identification.
Yes.
Yeah, what happens is that you're now a product of whoever that reservation is, and whether it's a travel agent or through the cruise line directly, there's a lot of problems with folks' privacy. So the cruise lines go to quite an extreme to make sure that people, you know, mind their own business. So, yeah, so, you know, just nobody can call up a cruise line and say, well, by the way, Barbara and her husband from Memphis, I know them well, you know, they want us to help out. Well, nobody even wants to tell them that you're on that cruise.
Yeah, okay. Well, I have one other question about my wheelchair is electric.
Mm-hmm.
Does not come apart. We are driving to Florida.
Good.
And but the thing is, if I want to fly somewhere, is there any chance I could ever take my wheelchair with me? I'm going to take it for the cruise. But if I wanted to fly somewhere, do the airlines have provisions to transfer these electric wheelchairs?
They do. And on our website, there's some information that can help you because there's some specific things. I mean, to say electric wheelchair, I know we're all speaking English, and I understand those words, but I'll tell you the biggest problems I ever have is when people are speaking English. So I would want to see, like, what it looked like, what kind of batteries it had on it, before I could give any assurances. But for the most part, I mean, let's just say that, you know, I know everything. I can see it. For the most part, as long as you're traveling with dry cell or, you know, sealed batteries, and, you know, you're approaching the airlines and you're traveling with it, you're not shipping, don't ever use that word, it's a swear word.
Okay.
You're traveling with, you require to travel with, you know, you're a wheelchair traveler, those things, you're boarding that plane, and of course you can take that along with you.
Okay.
Now, what happens when it leaves your hands? Well, that's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, first, you're not allowed to sit in it, in the plane.
Yeah.
Nobody would want that. Second is it'll be stored underneath the plane.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a couple suggestions on our website under travel tips.
Okay.
At accessiblejourneys.com. You know, little things you can do that hopefully, knock on wood, is one of them. I just knocked on wood here. That when somebody's handling your scooter, that they certainly understand that, you know, they're handling something precious as your legs.
Yes.
Yeah. So
yes.
It truly is a human connection. And I found that, you know, as long as you're doing your part, you know, like I have a little label that I put over top of that. And, like, I'm, like, looking at the person saying, are you the person that's handling my friend's scooter?
Mm-hmm.
You know, she'd like so much, like, we're going away. And, I mean, if you're handling this, you know, like, I'd really try to, you know, have them relate to, like, my friend, you know, when I used to after school or, you know, where I'd say, these are my clients. You know, see all these wheelchairs? You know, if anything happens to any one of these wheelchairs, these folks, while I'm away, are going to be so peeved.
Yes.
You know, and I got to be with them. I'm trying to help these. And, you know, when you make that human connection, I really believe people want to help.
Okay.
Yeah, I have heard horror stories on airlines, but you know what? There are so many people that fly with their scooters nowadays.
Oh, well, you know, I didn't know. I've had EMS for 20-something years,
mm-hmm.
but I've just been in a wheelchair possibly this past year, and it's the first time I've done any traveling with it, and I didn't even know anything about accessibility travel and disability travel through an agency because I talked to some agencies here, and there were not much help.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things that you might want to consider is renting a scooter. There is a national company called Scoot Around North America, fine Canadian company.
Okay.
I love those folks. They are doing a really good job. If you're going on a cruise, there are two companies out there, Care Vacations and Special Needs at Sea.
Okay.
Both of those will rent equipment for you on a cruise.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So now, you know, hold on, Barb. You know, that's a long way from that, like, airplane to that cruise. So they're not going to meet you there, but if you say, I need a scooter, then they could have it for you on the cruise ship.
Oh, that would be okay, because the airports do, I, for a long time, I have not been able to walk the long distance that is required in airports.
Right.
So I've had to use their chairs, you know. And,
well, I'll tell you what you could do, and you know, this is, again, good advice for somebody I don't know and who isn't my client. But what I like to do is I like to have my clients arrive in an airport with their own wheelchair. I mean, you know, it shows that you're stepping up and, you know, you got a disability.
Yes.
And, you know, you need that special travel handling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I find that, you know, if you come there prepared, first, you know, you got one of those wheelchairs that fits, that it feels good, you know, that it's all oiled, you know, and you get some special handling. And, you know, I can't always say you're going to be first, but you're going to get some special handling, and it helps at especially in the longer hauls.
Yeah.
I mean, in these quickie little hop and jumps in America, you know, you see hundreds of people in wheelchairs. I think you're just like, you know, somebody standing in line.
Yes.
But on the longer hauls, it's going to help.
Okay.
And then when you get to your destination, it's going to help you transition over to the ship, where on the ship, yeah, you could have that scooter zipping all over, girl. Now, when you're getting off the ship, depending on your cruise line and where you're going, there's a lot of issues with disembarking about with a scooter or an electric wheelchair.
There is.
Yes, there is.
Mm-hmm.
Because, first, if it's a tender and you're out there bobbing around at sea, well, you're sort of like the old and the infirm, you know, because there are folks who, you know, if there's bad equipment or bad weather, you know, all able-bodied men, and especially the old and the infirm, the women, the children, and, you know, people in wheelchairs, stay aside, you know. Really, I've been aside where I've like, I'm not going out there anyway. Looking outside, and I'm like, are you kidding me? They're like letting men go out there? Go ahead, men.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I'll be glad to be back there with the sick and the infirm. I'm not going out there. It was terrible. So the captain said he was moving the ship around block the weather. We were in the Falklands, and I'm thinking, are you kidding me? Blocking the weather, so what? You get outside of his wake, and then you get clobbered? So we did go out, and it did block it.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't say that, you know, necessarily anybody who went out that day was going out in a power chair. We put everybody that went off in the Falklands in a manual chair because it was so brutal.
Mm-hmm.
It
mm-hmm.
was, you know, really rocking. And, you
mm-hmm.
know, you have to get from an electric wheelchair that's hundreds of pounds. And I can think of my friend who's like hundreds of pounds herself. And then we put her in a manual wheelchair. We got her across. We got her electric wheelchair across. But when we got there, you know, the idea that she was like, I'm going to take this electric wheelchair out in this, like, snarly rain. She's like, put a bag over it.
Yeah.
And they have a trash bag that they always carry to, like, slip over top of it. And they put her case up, and they left it in the visitor center, and they went out in the pouring rain. And, you know, saw what the Falklands had to offer.
Well, I'm sorry, I've got so many questions. Mm-hmm. But if I'm on the ship and I have my electric wheelchair, will they, if I want to get off, and do they have manual wheelchairs? My husband would push me. I just have more freedom
I wouldn't want to answer for you that they would have them available for you. I'm first not your agent. Second, that I would not want to advise you that in such a crucial time you would expect somebody to provide something for you that you require.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because the cruise line has the first obligation to take care of those people in the infirmary. And while I've been there and I've seen 25 wheelchairs stashed in their room,
uh-huh.
I know when I had a broken one, I went to them and I knew this guy I was working with. He went up there and he showed me. He's like, Howard, there's none. Look. And I was like, whoa. You know, yeah, they deal out like wheelchairs like flour.
Oh.
I'm telling you, yeah, people on a cruise ship, when you have 3,000 people, imagine that 1% gets hurt.
Yes.
Or 1% comes on thinking that they could make it.
Yes.
So if I would say that in a cruise ship that's 900 feet long, you know, you got a lot of 450-foot days, boy, if that port of call that you want to get off is like 2 days into the cruise, there's not going to be any cruise, you know, any wheelchairs there left.
Right, right.
Yeah, you need to come.
And when you get off, either.
Well, if you contact Care Vacations or Special Needs at Sea, they'll make sure you have a manual wheelchair on there or an electric wheelchair on board the ship.
Okay.
And you get off and you just leave it on there.
Oh, okay.
There you go. And you give my colleague a call tomorrow, and, you know, she can probably help you out with some other things there.
Oh, you have been so helpful. Yeah. I'm so glad to find you and that you exist.
Well, I think this is just such a cool service. I think, like, to have this kind of technology and a call-in where a group of people can talk and,
yes,
you know, hear about a topic. Boy, I heard this, and I told Meredith, I said, for the first moment I heard it, I said, I'm in. You know, I'm in. That's too cool. We got to be in on this one.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, Barbara.
And I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Thank you. Our next question is coming from Richard. Richard, you may go ahead. Please state the city and state from which you are calling.
Yeah, this is Rich Labby from St. Augustine, Florida. I know you've talked already about the size of bathrooms on airplanes. I am a quadriplegic. And if I want to fly from St. Augustine to Australia, I know I probably need a leg bag for urine, but what do I do for the other? What does the airline provide?
Wow, Rich, you know what they provide? Oh, boy, just almost nothing. I mean it. I'm sorry to say. You know, I have been in a wheelchair-accessible bathroom closet, and they just don't provide enough room for a quad and a companion to get it done. And there's a couple things that I could offer to you as solutions that have been in the past. And first is that the hang time, if you're out in San Francisco, the hang time to get from San Fran over to Paris is the same time it takes for you to get down to Sydney. And it's 11 hours in the air. So going down to, you know, Kiwi land or to Aussie land is not that far away. But depending on where you are in the United States, has to position you out there on the West Coast. The second thing is that most of our quads are doing a regimented bowel program. And they make sure that that just fits right in with their fly schedule. And that is a fortune that I would have to say that, you know, our quad wheelies have, because other folks who are innervated, well, they don't have a bowel program. I have a couple clients where, you know, it's quite a program and quite a problem because they can't think of getting themselves into a regimentation because they still have innervation. For a lot of our quad wheelie guys and girls, you know, that Monday, Wednesday, Friday, yay, Friday night, we're on the plane. You know, we're fine. We're not doing anything till Sunday, and by Sunday, you're down in Auckland. Did I answer your question?
Yes, you did.
Yeah, now, a couple things. That leg bag, if you're practicing, you know, I would say anybody who's doing anything, you know, don't wait to try it out on vacation. The second is that there's a couple cool products out there. One of the ones we found on our website is a gel. It's a powder that turns to a gel when fluid hits it. And for us guys, you know, it's just like cover it up and there you go, and it becomes like a jello bag. For our girls, it's the same thing, and it's a pretty cool product. It's one on our website, and I've had a lot of folks who have traveled with that. Instead of having a fluid that, you know, after they've used their leg bag to change it around, what they've done is in their leg bag is put this powder inside of it, you know, taken and opened one of the containers and put it inside of their leg bag so they don't have fluid as much as they have, like, Jell-O inside of a bag.
That's a good idea. I've already got one of those Jell-O things.
How did it work for you?
Oh, great.
Yeah? Good, good. Good, good.
Thank you. Our next question is coming from Martha. Martha, you may go ahead. Martha, your line is live.
Yes, this is Tom. I'm with Martha. I think you answered part of the question. On transatlantic flights, there is no such thing as, from what I just heard, as a wheelchair-accessible lavatory that an assistant could fit in with the wheelchair passenger. Is that correct?
Well, you know, of course, all things being created equal, that is not always true. I can tell you that the problem, if I show you a wheelchair-accessible bathroom, it's in that, you know, my friends I travel with, you know, when I take them to the John, you know, you open up the door, and there's the commode at the far end of the room. The trouble is that there they are facing the commode, and between myself and my friend is the back of a wheelchair seat. So I'm like, you know, let's get this wheelchair out of the way. And they're like, well, I can't stand up without the wheelchair, you know. Well, then, you know, trying to get them over onto that commode, phew, you know, I can push them over there close to it as I can. I just can't climb over top of their wheelchair. I have seen some rooms that open up that offer more room. But, you know, I've never found a configuration that I have found, you know, I don't know, maybe the beefcakes travel with me. I'm a big guy. You know, if I could travel with a tiny passenger, maybe the two of us could get it done in a bathroom, you know, where I would think that it could be thought of as accessible. But, you know, I've been in this a very long time, and, you know, it's usually only those passengers who have good upper body strength who can take care of themselves that can get over onto the commode. And you, as a companion, could take your partner in this aisle chair that would be available to you to the bathroom doorway. But that's a big, tall leap to say that they're going to get on that commode and that the whole process is going to be accessible.
So there's no airline that would be better than another one, or that, I mean, basically they're all pretty much the same as on domestic flights?
Well, no. I think that, you know, a lot of this depends on, it's in the eyes of the beholder, where, you know, it's your flight and you're going there, and it's worthy not to worry about so much the schedule, but what's the fuselage and the configuration? I have configuration flyers. You know, I'm only flying a DC-9, Howard. You know, and I have other clients that are only flying business. I have one client that only would fly first until, you know, damn near bankrupt her, because she was able to take her wheelchair directly into the first class compartment. Big, big, on certain planes that she knew, that when she would call us up and she would say, Howard, I want these flights. This is my flight schedule. I have to have it. She knew that she was able, from past experience, to be able to come right in the door and take her wheelchair directly in there, make a turn where she was able to be offloaded into passenger seat number 4. So for her, it was the only thing that was, you know, what she considered to be accessible. And then as they began to take, you know, the seats away and make them flying beds, the last time she went, besides being frightfully expensive, they made them inaccessible. That, you know, in the first class compartments where the seats lay down and there's a barrier left and right, they didn't actually take into account that one of the people using those seats might want it to be a person with disability. So you can't get the wheelchair next to the seat. They had to lift her up into the air and down into the seat. And, you know, this person had been dropped, so she is frightfully afraid of anybody handling her whatsoever. And this was like her last and her worst flight, I'm sure. She made it there safely, but, you know, not to be duplicated.
Is there any information on your website about configurations of planes or which ones?
There is. I mean, I can't say which ones. I would say peruse. I know on our travel resources under airlines, I put everything that I use for airlines, you know, IATA codes, plane configurations. Somebody says, you know, what does it mean when I come on an Airbus 300? I go right to our website. And it's got configurations there where you can look at them and, you know, see. The problem isn't the airlines, though, is that, you know, they have every right to just change the service. You know, like, and you say, I was supposed to have an Airbus 300. Oh, it's broken. You don't want to fly in that plane. We got a good old DC, you know, a 700 outside. you know, and at that moment you are at their choice. And, you know, I would say, again, depending on where you're flying and the nature of your situation, I don't know. Most folks, when they're really looking, they're saying, I can get a flight to Milan for, you know, 800 and, you know, one from that stops in Venice for 600. Which one do you think I should take? They're really not talking to me a lot about configuration. They you know, yeah. Most folks, you know, in the modern world, you know, they're not thinking so much as, like, you know, everybody else is getting cheap flights. How do I get to Italy?
We want to do a Mediterranean cruise. Do you have a lot of your clients that actually take a ship and cruise across to pick up their...
They do. I have a guy this year. He must make money. He prints it. He's refused. I flew him down to South America after that. Something happened to him, and he refuses now to take a flight. So he's taking the QE2 over to England. He's then taking a boat from England all the way down to the Middle East, and he's coming back, I swear. You know, so there are a lot of trips that are leaving. You can go from here to the States and travel around the Med and come back 2 weeks later and never touch a wing. You can fly over to England you know, from there, it's only 3 hours underneath the English Channel to get to Paris, you know, so you're only, 6 hours then away from Marseille. So England's, a fairly relative close touching place from Boston. I know it's only 5 hours, Philly, 5.5.
Oh, I didn't realize it was that short to
land. Well, it's the hang time, but, you know, getting into the airport, getting loaded into the plane, locked in, seatbelt on, and then waiting on the taxi line till you get off and into the potty again, that's about 7 hours.
Right.
Hang time is about 5 hours from Philly.
Okay, it's been very helpful. Thank
you. Very good. Thank you.
This is Meredith. I'm afraid we are out of time for tonight, but Howard, I want to thank you so much for being with us tonight. I think everyone has found you very helpful.
Well, I've enjoyed talking to everyone and problem solving.
Thank you. Now I'll turn it back over to the operator.
Thank you. Thank you for agreeing to give us your opinion about our teleconferences, Accessible Travel. Your opinion will help chapter volunteers and staff in designing and improving future programs. Experience tells us that it typically takes about 5 minutes to complete the survey. Your responses are confidential and will not affect the services you receive from the chapter in any way. Thank you. Question 1. What is your relationship to multiple sclerosis? Press 1 if you are the person with multiple sclerosis. Press 2 if your spouse or partner, if you are the spouse or partner of a person with multiple sclerosis. Press 3 if you are the parent of a person with multiple sclerosis. Press 4 if you are a child of a person with multiple sclerosis. Press 5 if an extended family member or a friend of a person with multiple sclerosis. Press 6 if you are a healthcare provider of a person with multiple sclerosis. Press 7 if you are a coworker of a person with multiple sclerosis. And press 8 for any other. Thank you. Question 2. Approximately how long have you or the person you care about been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis? Press 1 for less than 1 year. Press 2 for 1 to 2 years. Press 3 for 2 to 4 years. Press 4 for 4 to 10 years. And press 5 for 10 years or more. Thank you. Question 3. I can name at least one new thing I've learned about traveling with a disability. Press 1 for strongly disagree. press 2 for disagree, press 3 for agree, press 4 for agree strongly, and press 5 for no opinion. Thank you. Question number 4. I understand the importance of planning ahead. Press 1 for disagree strongly. Press 2 for disagree. Press 3 for agree. Press 4 for agree strongly. Or press 5 for no opinion. Thank you. Question number 5. I feel more knowledgeable about traveling with a disability. Press 1 for disagree strongly. Press 2 for disagree. Press 3 for agree. Press 4 for agree strongly. And press 5 for no opinion. Thank you. One moment for the next question, please. Press 1 if you are a male. Press 2 if you are a female. Thank you. Press 1 if you are under 25. Press 2 if you are 26 to 35 years of age. Press 3 if you are 36 to 45 years of age. Press 4 if you are 46 to 55 years of age. Press 5 if you are 56 to 65. And press 6 for 66 and above. Thank you. This does conclude this evening's National MS Society conference call. You may now disconnect.
Meredith?
One moment, please.